by, so I step out in the AM. The street is black and shiny from the nightly rain. The glory of the light brings evaporation. Morning's fresh, oxygen cleanest. I take a deep hit, help my mind stay the greenest. I'm already awake, so I'm not drinking coffee. Don't want a cigarette, cause it's a form of slavery. Walk into the store, cause I need a few items. The sun heats my blood, like a hit of vitamins. I need to buy some food, some poo for my dreads. I can't remember why, but I need a spool of thread. Well, a man with dirty dreads, he steps around the corner. He asks me for a dime, a nickel or a quarter. I don't have any change, so I'm stepping along. But as I'm walking past, he sings to me a song. There's a hole in the bucket, realize. I'm humming the song. The buses and the people all keep moving along. To the shopkeeper I say, what's up? And I'm thinking about the man who's holding up the cup. I pay for all the stuff and get a pocket full of change. Well, should I give it to the man's a question in my brain. What's gonna happen if I give the man a dime? I don't wanna pay for another brother's wine. What's gonna happen if I give the man a quarter? Will he find a dealer and try to place an order? What's gonna happen if I give the man a nickel? Will he buy some food or some pork that's been pickled? I'm not responsible for the man's depression. How can I find compassion in the midst of a recession? How can all these questions keep with my head? And I still can't remember why I need a spool of thread. There's a hole in the bucket. Dear Eliza. There's a hole.
Good evening. This is Michael Anderson. And you are, good evening. This is 90.7, your community radio station. This is Michael Anderson, and you are listening to Hole in the Bucket on KBOO FM. We have a good show tonight. We have a couple guests. Before I get into the show, I want to start by saying a couple things. KBOO's Hole in the Bucket is your community radio station's show about housing and homelessness. On the show, we discuss all the issues that impact and are a result of the poverty and lack of resources experienced by so many people living immediately in our community and across the country. So, before we get into tonight's program, I have a couple news items that I want to highlight. The first is that the Oregon Statewide Housing Alliance is having its lobby day on Tuesday, February 6th, down in Salem. The Oregon Housing Alliance is a coalition of over 40 organizations, cities, counties, nonprofits, and other developers of affordable housing from around the state that have joined together to win resources needed to increase housing opportunity. And the Housing Alliance has a very exciting proposal for $100 million for affordable housing that is gaining considerable momentum down in Salem. But in order to give that momentum the oomph that it needs and get it over the edge, people like you need to get involved. What you can do if you'd like to increase housing opportunity in Oregon is go down to Salem this February 6th. You can get in touch with the Housing Alliance by contacting me, your host, Michael Anderson, at 503-335-9884. You can email me at Mike, M-I-K-E, at cdnportland.org, or you can go to the Oregon Housing Alliance website and use any of the contact emails there to get a hold of Housing Alliance representatives who can plug you in. The second news item is about federal housing advocacy. oftentimes when we talk about the issues that result from poverty and people not having a stable place to call home, we try to contextualize it in the history and the factors that lead us to the place where we are now. And very squarely, to be succinct and to the point, the failure of trickle-down economics and the 30 years of disinvestment by the federal government in affordable housing has put us exactly where we find ourselves in current-day Oregon and current-day America. Working families having a hard time paying the rent and still putting food on the table. Seniors and people with disabilities struggling with fixed incomes to try to afford housing and other basic necessities. Right now, our federal government is considering a budget situation where they are going to just appropriate last year's budget over because of political reasons. A budget wasn't passed this year. That would be horrible for housing. What it would mean here in Portland is that seniors and people with disabilities who are currently living in public housing on the most meager of incomes would be forced to try to pay for their utility bills, get medicine, put food on the table, all of which with increasing costs to their own housing. It's an impossible situation. It's unfair, and it's something that we as community members need to speak up upon. So what you need to do this evening, when you're done listening to the show, is contact your senator. Contact Senator Ron Wyden or Senator Gordon Smith or your local representative, all of which you can find very easily on the internet, and let them know. We need housing for all Oregonians. Housing opportunity is the key to a successful life, and we need to keep those doors as wide open as possible. Tonight's show, we are very pleased for the first portion of the show to be joined in the studio by Romeo Sosa, who works with the organization VOS. Romeo's organization focuses on workers' rights, particularly of immigrants, but in general, the day laborer workers, which face a myriad of issues. So with no further ado, Romeo, good evening. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
So talk to me about VOS. What is VOS and what do you do?
Yeah, VOS is a day labor project, which we started in 1996 because the repression by INS and local business, there's a lot of abuse going on and raids by INS. And it started in 1996, but in VOS started in 2000. VOS primarily work with day labor, like you mentioned. What we do is organizing day laborers and develop leadership among them, because the only as a group we can resist all this abuse is happen on a daily basis with day laborers. Day laborers, for the audience, if in case you don't know, are the people who are looking for work in the street areas and on the public. There are two locations here in Portland, 6th and Burnside and I-84 and Martin Luther King. Many of them, they come from Latin America, and there's a few Americans too, African Americans, and there's a few also, sometimes they show up like Asians. So they live, but most of them, they are Latin American men, and they do any kind of work, like since painting your house, gardening, construction work, anything. The life of day labor is, they don't know like the work they're going to do. It's a life of uncertainties. Mm-hmm. They don't know what kind of work they're going to do. They don't know like if they're going to get paid that day, or they're going to have an accident and they don't get health treatment. And all this kind of abuse is happening like daily. Then a lot of people, they take advantage of them, just make them work and they don't pay, or they offer $10 an hour and then they pay $5 because they say then it's not a good work they did. Accident in the work too, and sometimes they bring in, drop them off at the corner because they don't want to be responsible for the accident happening in the workplace.
So then the purpose of VOS is to help organize among these day laborers and, as you said, give a voice for some of the abuses. And I want to spend a little bit more time on that. I think certainly there's been a lot of attention in the media about immigrants coming to this country looking for work. Oftentimes there's a lot of controversy around how that's presented. But I want to just talk a little bit more about the reality of the day laborers before we get into some of those issues. You talk about, so anybody could be picking them up. They don't know who's picking them up on a given day for a job. They're just going with whoever says, oh, we have this work for you today. This is what we're paying. This is what you're going to be doing. But when they get into that truck, they don't really know that that's what's going to happen. Talk about that experience. You called it uncertainty. But what kind of uncertainty are these workers facing?
Like I said, anything can happen. Arrest by violating municipality ordinance or sidewalk, like the police, because the traffic, you know, when there is an employer stop there, everybody wants to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's other traffic too if the police is there, so they can give a ticket because they are interrupting the traffic.
The day laborers can get a ticket.
Yeah.
Now, do the contractors or whoever's picking people up, do they get a ticket as well?
No. No, that's happened in the past, but you know, since that we start relation with how is that the dynamic with day labor? How did they get the job? We start talking with the police and how is that? What is that group? And also, I think we're talking with and other schools too, like why they are here and mm-hmm. what this group are doing, and. Beside that, like sometimes the like right now, some of the they're changing a lot at the corner. A lot of new arrivals, business, they don't want the presence of their laborers. Hate crimes sometimes happen, and also some because their laborers they have money in cash. Sometimes happen robberies.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, and now the Minutemen they come and protest to the corners too.
So, and that seems like that would be quite a chilling environment. Not only to you face the regular uncertainty of just trying to get the work, find what you're going to be doing for the day. Talk about how it's been with the Minutemen focusing on these pickup sites.
Yeah, the Minutemen, like their main goal is to target day labor sites, day labor corner. And it's not only in Portland. They have the whole campaign to target day labor around the country. And they've been harassing and intimidating day laborers. They want to stop to hire, like they say, undocumented workers to be hired. But for us, it's like the extreme racism in these people, like who hate the immigrants. Immigrants, they are putting a lot of contribution to this country. And, you know, like the issue of immigration, it's like one of the hot topic right now, the debate going on. And we think then it's more like political purpose, the Minutemen. It's not only they try to not hire people, but it's more than, it's a big picture. Like it's, I don't know how to say, like it's a, it's more political.
On this radio station, on a show called Buscando America, there was a dialogue that was there that included some members of the Minutemen. And some of what they were talking about was saying that they were trying to protect the rights of the day laborers, that they were concerned about some of the same issues that you were articulating, which is people not getting their wages, unsafe working conditions. Is that sentiment genuine in your experience? Is there some shared concern with the Minutemen, or is it more an oppositional relationship to the core.
Can you say again?
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that I heard representatives from the Minutemen articulate the point of view that they don't like the illegal immigrants, but they're also concerned about any workers getting treated poorly. Mm-hmm. And VOES, certainly that's the reason VOES exists, to protect and make sure that workers are getting treated in a fair manner. So I'm saying, is there common ground between VOES and the Minutemen, or is the conflict so large that right now there's no common ground?
I think it's so large. It's like the extreme phase of the racism is still exists in this country. If you know the story, this is the new immigrants here, and we want the same treatment and respect like as the immigrants came before. And like I say, the laborers, their only thing they are trying to find is a work, for an honest work for a day, and support their families and themselves, you know, like any human here. Mm-hmm. And the undocumented issue, the illegal immigrant issue I think it's very complex to a lot of people. They don't understand why the presence of the laborers and the undocumented here in the U.S. And it's more than not only to understand like the dynamic or the how is this country is making us to move to another country, mm-hmm. like CAFTA, the mm-hmm. NAFTA, and all these. Instead of helping us, they are making our community more poor. And you don't have no choice when you are planting a corn in your village. I'm from Guatemala. And if the biggest corporation, they selling corn cheap, and your corn you cannot sell anymore. You cannot live in the poverty. And plus that, the civil war. And many of reason why we leave our country. And I think nobody wants to leave their country just to go to work another place. Everyone wants to be together. But the needs is a bigger. When your kids are hungry or they are dying, as a human being, you have to see how can you solve that problem. And a lot of people, they are trying to come to the United States because there is more job opportunities. And a lot of people, they cannot make it. Like just in the last year, more than 400 people, they have died trying, you know. And I don't think it's fair that people, they are really trying to look for work, they can die, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the situation. People, they are not coming because they want to be illegal. It's because there is no way to come to this country legally, and there is no option. So people, they have to even try to in the desert, even if they're gonna die or survive, you know.
So one of the things that I think is rather remarkable about what VOES is trying to do in the face of clearly a very hostile time right now, where the racism and the anti-immigrant sentiments have really been stirred up. VOES is taking a new approach to educate the community and build understanding. Could you talk a little bit about the theater project?
Yeah, VOES is doing a lot of different projects. There is also, we only see workers at the corner, but there is a lot of people. There's teachers come from Latin America, and they start as a day laborer, or engineers, people who are really prepared in our country, and doing a day labor work here. And a lot of people also, they bring a lot of talent with them. And VOES is trying to educate the community also, then understand that we are not only workers. We have artists there. One of the samples is in Los Angeles. They develop a group called Los Jornaleros del Norte, which is they become more popular, and their story was in many media. And one of the things we are doing is also to open a space to a day laborer to sing poetry, mm-hmm. Teatro, and all different kind of things, then to show the community, then also we have talents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to talk a little bit about the teatro. The Tardes Culturales is like a space where they can share, like I say, the talents. We have English classes, we have computer classes, we have monthly workshops, and also among the day laborers, we have we call Círculo de Estudio, where a study circle. And we try to get to the roots of the cause of our immigration. The corner is just a small picture of the biggest picture, why we left our countries. And we share experience and we learn from each other. And in that studying Círculo de Estudio. And we are connected also with the National Day Labor Network. It's a national coalition of day labor group. And we share experience what's going on in other states. And beside that, we use the sport, the art and the culture in order to organize the day laborers. The teatro, the mission of the teatro, we started the Teatro Jornalero, we call it a day labor theater. It was last year, because the need to educate ourselves and to educate other community. In the beginning was to educate ourselves about the anti-immigrant proposal who are against the day laborers. And also it's a way to share the dream and the hopes of the day laborer. But also the theater group, part of that, we use the theater of the oppressed, where the oppressed people can participate. They're also, we are breaking the way where actors and audience,
mm-hmm.
The audience in this other way of theater is involving in how can we face our reality right now. Audience, you don't have to be a really actor to be in this theater mm-hmm. group. It's like how can the oppressed people participate in order to face all these issues?
Well, I have to say, and this is a effort around using the arts and the theater that I think is very tremendous. I think most successful social movements have had this element of art and other ways of reaching out to people. How's your experience been doing the productions in the neighborhoods? Are people participating and showing up?
Yes, people, they are showing up, and I think some of the things to people, they are conscious about more about the immigration and whys. You know, I think the people, they don't know the answer of why. It's like, why we are here, why they are their laborers, why they are not going to someplace else and find a full-time job. Day laborers, they really want a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
They are not, the whole group are there every morning. It's not the same next month.
Mm-hmm.
They are, it's a population, it's in constantly moving search for work. If they have to go to another state, they will go to another state. So they are always look for a permanent job.
We are listening to Hole in the Bucket on KBU FM 90.7. I'm Michael Anderson. I'm joined with Romeo Sosa, and we are talking about VOES, and in particular, the theater project, and how that both educates the community and helps build the movement itself. Well, one of the things that I was thinking as you were talking, often what Jay and I talk about here on Hole in the Bucket is the way that a whole group of people get lumped into this one group called homeless, and you forget that that involves seniors, veterans, people with disabilities, people working jobs, families, you know, a whole range. It seems very similar with day laborers. It's this one category, but within that is, from what you said, all walks of life. People who've come from other countries, doctors, teachers, they come here. This is the only work they could find. And it seems like through the theater and some of these other programs, you're bringing it back out and saying, no, we're all people. We're doing this for work, but we have our dreams and our ambitions as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes we forget that day laborers, they're like anybody else, have hopes and dreams, like have needs for their families, and they're like, sometimes they see us like the lowest class of the workers here in this country, you know, and it's been always the immigration issue is one of the biggest thing. Like employers, they take advantage of that, and we always try to. We believe in the workers here. They laborers. They are constantly looking for the American dream.
Well, and it's funny. I think it. Sometimes I think about the fact that it is, you know, deemed as the American dream, as it were. It seems like it's a dream. Well, certainly it could extend to all the Americas, but probably to the whole world. I mean, what we're talking about, right, is having a place to live, being able to work and provide for your family and your loved ones, to see your kids grow up, to see your parents grow old, all those very basic things. I'm going to shift the subject because, like always, we're getting close to the end of our segment here. But I wanted to talk about a couple other important aspects of VOS. VOS was crucial in organizing a lot of the marches that we saw in the past year. Are there more rallies or marches coming up?
I think this last year, the historic march happened last year. And if, like many of you, saw the biggest movement going on, it's because they are get to the point where, like, you treat you as a criminal. The only thing you are doing is looking for work. And right now, we're still in the process thinking how we can keep that spirit in this moment. And just an idea. We have maybe on the May 1st, something we're going to do, but right now I cannot say anything, but I think we are going to that point.
Well, we would certainly look forward to sharing the information with our listening audience. I mean, one of the things, as we wrap up, it's one of the things that Hole in the Bucket that we talk about when we look at why are people homeless? Why are people in the greatest desperate straits? That it's a byproduct of the economy and the society that we live in. And frankly, there's a real need to keep a group of people at the bottom. And I think that's what VOS sees as well. It says, hey, you know, you can't just keep pushing us down when we're doing everything we can to try to make ends meet. We're working hard. For our listening audience, if they wanted to find out more about VOS or get in touch with you and get more information, how would they do that?
Our phone number is 503-233-6787. Or we're locating that our office is in 1131 Southeast Oak Street. Or they can find us more information about what we do in at our website is www.portlandvoice.org.
Well, Romeo, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you very much for coming on, and good luck with VOS.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. All right. We will now take a short musical break, and then I am going to come back with Catherine Houston Suazo, a volunteer with NAMI, who is doing particular work around some mental health issues that some of the new veterans are experiencing as they come home. So this is Your Wealth Will Not Get You Into Heaven by Hank Williams. Welcome back to Hole in the Bucket. This is Michael Anderson. Just a crack job by our Hole in the Bucket engineer, Sean Ongley, tonight. We are right on time, right on time. All right. So, again, we tonight are joined for the second half of our show by Catherine Houston Suazo. She is a volunteer with NAMI, which is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. Good evening, Catherine.
Good evening.
How are you doing this evening?
Great.
Good, good. So tell us a little bit about NAMI. You're a volunteer. What is this organization?
This organization tries to provide support to families and individuals who are impacted by mental health diagnosis.
And so a family member has a diagnosis of a mental illness, and then you can become a member of NAMI, or anyone can get involved? Or
anyone who is interested in improving mental health community services, mental health concerns, wants to educate themselves, can certainly come down and be a volunteer at any one of our 18 affiliates throughout the state. I am working with a couple of our education programs. We offer a family-to-family support group for families with a member who's over the age of 18. We offer a Visions for Tomorrow, which is a really exciting program to help young families with children say, 2 to 4, 6, 9 years old with autism, ADHD, and many other severe mental health diagnoses that seem to be increasing in rate of occurrence. We offer a peer-to-peer program that's just come into the state new. It's a 9-week education program for folks with a mental health diagnosis to learn more about treatment options, find some peer support. And then we have a program called Interim Voice, where folks who have stabilized and learned coping skills and found good treatment in their journey to healing share that experience and offer hope to other folks who are on that path.
And the other thing about NAMI is that most of the active participants are volunteers like yourself.
Absolutely.
It's a real peer-to-peer, community-based approach
to
mental health advocacy. Mm-hmm. Well, super. Now, as I introduce you on the show, a lot of your volunteer work has specialized around some of the mental health challenges experienced by vets. Talk about that. How did you get involved with this effort?
Well, I happen to be a retired vet with a mental health diagnosis, and I am trying to increase the awareness within our community of unique needs for veterans. In some of the statistics nationally, of the homeless proportion or homeless population, there's a higher proportion of veterans, both male and female, represented. They tend to be older. They tend to have a higher degree of education than non-veterans, fairly similar childhood backgrounds, which all indicate that the things that put them out on the street tend to be related to their time serving in the military.
One of the things that we talk about a lot on the show vis-a-vis veterans and their experience, particularly as veterans, not when they're serving anymore, but as veterans, is, you know, whatever your view might be on war or peace or anything else, here are people who've made a tremendous sacrifice for this extremely wealthy nation, but oftentimes when they come back and try to get back to their lives, they have some real serious challenges and not maybe the help afforded to them that people might think.
Yes, and it's a cumbersome system to try and maneuver through to get benefits, to get certified for benefits. And there's a lot of folks that might go years kind of regressing before and wait till the situation gets into a crisis situation before they will go and seek benefits. So there is a lot of effort in homeless outreach work trying to reach those veterans and get them eligible so that they can access more benefits to help with their situation.
So is there typical mental health challenges or diagnoses that we see with veterans that are larger than the regular population?
Well, certainly PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, is very high for veterans. Diagnoses such as schizophrenia, there's question, can traumatic experiences cause schizophrenia? Mm-hmm. And what the research indicates is that though it won't cause it, you can have a hereditary disposition for a mental health issue and then put in a stressful mm-hmm. situation, it be triggered. Whereas had you never experienced that, it would never manifest.
Which, again, the parallels that we see on tonight's program. You know, I was talking with Romeo about some of the parallels between the way day laborers are viewed and homeless
yes.
people. Very similar, you know, people who live on the streets have a much higher instance of post-traumatic stress syndrome from that experience
exactly.
on the streets, and then it complicates it further. So veterans see some of that same snowball dynamic.
Absolutely. Another element that I work in, I've come from 10 years of working with suicide prevention and bereavement, and I've been volunteering at NAMI to try and help build a bridge between those two communities. And one of the common denominators in homelessness, in suicide prevention, bereavement, and mental illness is stigma. And Portland State University has got a great program that's coming out of that from some of the faculty called the Stop Stigma Campaign, the Oregon Stop Stigma Campaign. And struggling with not only the physical circumstances of having a mental illness, but frequently it's much more traumatizing dealing with the stigma associated with that and the social interactions, which I'm sure is just as prevalent, if not more, with homelessness. And then you add both of those things together, it can be very paralyzing and very traumatic as well.
So for veterans who are experiencing mental health issues, what are the avenues that people get hooked into service? Do they need to go through the VA to get service?
A lot of veterans actually get service in the community through homeless shelters and not necessarily accessing the veterans' hospital and emergency rooms as frequently as they are found in the community. And I'm wondering if that might also be one of those factors of feeling more inclusive with your own peers than a homeless vet at the VA.
Well, one of the things too, and I'm pretty far removed from having this connection, but I had several friends and acquaintances that were veterans who were homeless, partly because they were awaiting
yes.
Access to VA services,
yes.
sometimes 8 or 9 months
mm-hmm.
for some simple, usually this is on the physical side,
mm-hmm.
but some simple medical procedures that would allow them to get back in the workforce, but they were queued up, as I said, 8, 9 months and living
Correct.
On cots in a shelter.
Correct. And I think one of the motivating factors for me to continue raising the awareness of veterans' mental health issues is because there's an assumption, I think, by the general population that the Veterans Administration is taking care of all of the veterans, that the troops are being honored and served, and we don't need to worry about those folks. And it's just not true. There's a overrepresentation of them. Not only that, but tend to have more severe, not only are they homeless, they have more severe mental health issues, whether it's heart problems, you know, like you were mentioning, surgeries or something that would make them employable. You have these comorbid factors that can really hinder a person's ability to work and provide for themselves.
You know, I think that unfortunately, we sort of have a history of not caring for our veterans the way our patriotic rhetoric would sometimes suggest. But I'm particularly interested in hearing you talk about, we know veterans from the Gulf War, that the different challenges and disabilities and afflictions that occurred during the Gulf War, certainly from the general public, information started trickling out years later about what people were experiencing. Now we're in a much more violent, much more sustained conflict where we've had a lot more troops be exposed to really the horrors of humanity, the worst things you could possibly see. What's happening with these new veterans? Are we already seeing mental health issues beginning to surface?
At the middle of last year, some of the stats coming out were about 20%. So 1 in 5 troops are coming back with a severe mental health issue. In December, the stats went up to 25%. So 1 in 4 is coming back with a severe mental health need. In Desert Storm, that conflict lasted only a year. We only had 100 deaths of our service members. This war, this conflict is much more traumatic. These folks are going back 2 and 3 and 4 tours. So at the in talking with a few of the vet service outreach programs for homeless folks, looking at veterans' issues, I was asking if they've seen an increase in Iraqi Afghan populations, and they have not seen an increase in homelessness. However, we're anticipating that we will see those increases, say, 5 years, 10 years from now, as the veterans come back and try to reintegrate, and there's kind of a gradual regression or struggle that perpetuates and again goes into a crisis mode and winds up into homelessness and stuff.
So. Well, and I think that is one of the most complicated and cruelest parts of the reality of mental illness is, especially for loved ones and family members, they might not be prepared at all. So at first, you know, welcome home. Yeah, you can move back in with us. It's going well. But then all of a sudden, I don't understand your anger. I don't understand why you're reacting to these situations. Maybe you better move out. So it happens away down the road, you know, that you can hold things together for a while, but without the kind of support and medical and professional attention, that people are sort of left to fall through that hole in the bucket.
I had an uncle who was in the Marines. He served one tour in Korea, 3 tours in Vietnam, and he survived, but he sacrificed ever having a marriage, ever having children, ever owning a home. And so the price of service is frequently given in unmeasurable ways to calculate. You can't do surveys of how many folks never had this, that, and the other thing. And another piece to some of the work I do is trying to increase awareness of suicide prevention and support. We've got a really great community here in the Portland area that really takes action in helping people who are suffering and in need. There's, I think, an unseen population of drug and alcohol, homelessness, folks who have seen their friends OD, and it may not be viewed as suicide, but these are losses. And I would really like to invite folks to seek out suicide bereavement support groups. We have an annual walk for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. NAMI, you know, is trying to offer services to families. And I just want to make the extend open arms to folks who may not feel that they belong in those arenas, but you're greatly wanted. And I don't see a lot of us participating in these places, which is one of the reasons why I'm happy to come on the radio, talk about these things. When I was at the mayor's work group panel and implementation team for public safety and mental health, and a lot of folks are represented, but I don't see a lot of vets up. And so I really want to encourage us to feel we are citizens first and veterans second, because it's easy to sense sometimes we can have a different sense of being a exclusive community of folks, and after going through these traumatic events, reintegrating back into our community is very difficult.
So This is 90.7 on your FM dial, Hole in the Bucket on KBOO, your community radio. And this is Michael Anderson, and we're talking with Catherine Houston Suazo. So one of the things that you've talked a lot about is the need for people to get involved with NAMI. Let's put out those contact information once, and we'll come back to it in the show. So if we have listeners out there who want to find out more about NAMI, maybe get information for themselves, information for a family member or for a friend, how do they get in touch with somebody who can point them in the right direction?
We have a helpline at NAMI Oregon. The phone number is 503-230-8009 or 1-800-343-6264. And you can call our helpline and we can direct you to any of the 18 affiliates according to your county and your area that we serve, and connect you up with the coordinators for the education programs or volunteer work.
Is there any official relationship between or communication between the VA and NAMI or other organizations? And I'm particularly thinking around this issue of how do you help prepare families to develop the tools to support their loved ones who are coming home with this baggage and these challenges?
There is nothing formal. One of the reasons I'm kind of one of the only vets, so I offered to be the one of Oregon's representative for NAMI National's Coalition for Veterans. And that's one of the reasons I'm on this program. I don't feel well-equipped to do this, but by default, I feel the sense of urgency to, especially in light of, you know, 4 years of this conflict, starting our next one. And I look forward to this coming year and increasing those lines of communication. I did invite every vet service office in the state, mental health directors, and the Jim Willis at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to join us yesterday at our noon rally and press conference for mental health issues, which went phenomenal. We have got, at this time, following parity passing 2 years ago, we have got a new Congress that is very concerned and compassionate about mental health issues. And certainly over the last 4 years, with the focus on the service members, the attention is there. And I think we really need to join those two things to ensure that our communities are more equipped to welcome those vets and embrace them and assist them in the coming 5 to 10 years. Which leads me into the two programs that I'm working with as In Our Own Voice and Peer-to-Peer that NAMI offers. As we get more veterans willing to come and participate, we can uniquely tweak that to, and I'm putting out a call right now to all of you vets from Vietnam and Desert Storm, please contact me and let's get together and do some mentoring for these returning vets, mm-hmm. to help them understand the normal process of grief and loss, mm-hmm. and struggle as you try and reintegrate and heal from these unique experiences.
Well, yeah, just as you were saying that, it was occurring to me, yeah, because of course for these vets coming home, their experience is new to themselves as well.
Absolutely.
And they're probably like, why am I not happy?
Exactly.
Here I am, I made it. But you can't. It's not that simple.
No, it's not. And there's only a unique population of folks who can empathize and, mm-hmm. really understand and give them that hope and courage. So I know it might be asking a lot and we may not, like myself, I don't want to share my story. I'm not confident that it would give folks hope because the way I perceive it. However, as I have had the courage to share some with other folks, even in the last month or so, I've been very surprised at the reception that I get from my story. And again, we may not feel proud because we didn't have this expectation of having these struggles or obstacles. Yet, as we come out, we can create a new community. of hope and healing, and we are still needed.
Well, you know, I just have to say, too, to our listening audience here, for the veterans and other folks who Catherine was just calling out to, if they want to contact you directly, should they go through NAMI to get to you?
Yes, or? I think that's the best way. And that number, again, is 503-230-8009 or 1-800-343-6264. And this is a grassroots focus. We're just starting, so we will be doing this work together.
You know, and to the our audience who may have never been a veteran, may have never served the duty for the country in that aspect. You know, a lot of what we talk about in this community on this radio station is actually very much in opposition to this particular military enterprise and the loss of life that people are experiencing. One great way, I think, to get engaged and to do some of the healing necessary to, you know, to put some walk behind your talk sounds like stuff supporting the veterans coming home, whether
Absolutely.
It's on this mental health area, which is very specific, but I would imagine on a lot of other ways. The families have been under a lot of stress.
Absolutely.
Multiple tours of duty means regular income not coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any suggestions where people who wanted to do more helping veterans, more than just mental health, where they would contact? I know I'm putting you a little bit on the spot here.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is Golden Star Wives and Parents.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the unveiling of the memorial for the Iraq-Afghan troops that we've lost, and contacting those families, contacting the parents, and is the first thing that comes to mind. And right off the top of my head, I can't think. Maybe contacting the Veterans Service Organizations. There are different chapters throughout each county, and really growing some of those support systems.
Well, and I just think, you know, if it's such a crucial part of the healing and trying to get for these individual troops that have come home to help them get whole, to help their families get whole, to really help our community. I mean, it's been a horrible 5-year run that mm-hmm. we've been on. And I think, unfortunately, a very small group of people have felt the main brunt of mm-hmm. that. And they've been serving in our armed services. So I think it's time for us to reach out back to them and say, it's been really hard. How can we help you?
And I think it's important to understand that it's not the government. It's not Congress' responsibility to take care of our folks. It's our responsibility to reach out to each other as individuals. So
Well, Catherine, it's been a really big pleasure having you here tonight. I will say one more thing for our listeners. I put a plug out right in the beginning about calling your legislators, because I think Catherine's right. We have individual responsibility, but there's also some decisions being made with all our tax dollars that we should speak up on. And Catherine was just down with NAMI in Salem yesterday. Get online. Google Oregon Legislature. You can find your legislators if you don't know them. Send them an email and say, let's make sure we take care of our vets. Let's make sure we get our mental health services up where we need to be so we can honor the commitment that they've made. So, Catherine, any closing words?
No, just to reiterate on that, let's make sure that we are creating, that we've learned from the experience of the suffering and pain that folks from Korea and Vietnam have gone through. And let's make sure that we've got more services. The whole message yesterday was creating a community service of care. A theme that I came up with that we could fit on a little banner is care before crisis.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. How can we create, each of us individually, that work to create a system of community care before any crisis?
Catherine, I really appreciate your work. It's wonderful that people like you give so much back. So thank you very much for coming on our show, and best of luck. Thank you for tuning in to Hole in the Bucket. This is Michael Anderson saying good night for myself.